That was Joe Biden the other day when asked if he had a message for Iran in connection with their presumed attack on Israel. Don't. This is Jeffrey Lichtman for Beyond the Legal Limit, and obviously we learned over the weekend that Biden, no matter how many times he scrunches up his eyes to make himself look like Clint Eastwood talking tough, saying don't to Muslim terrorists, that they don't care at all what he thinks. They're not concerned about him. They're not deterred by him, more importantly. The great United States, with more power than any country in the world, can't put any kind of scare into Iran. And after Iran attacked Israel on Saturday on Israeli soil, an attack which originated from Iran, the first time Iran has ever attacked Israel this way. 300 missiles and drones sent all over Israel, which could have been a disaster if Israel hadn't been able to shoot them down with the help of its allies, including not only the United States, but also the Saudis and Jordan as well. These are two Muslim countries that have been attacked by Iranian terror proxies, so they are aligned with Israel, and because Israel is obviously suffering the same fate from Iran. So when I hear this is the first time Iran has ever attacked a country, that's just utter bullshit. Let me just say that from the start. Because Iran has been attacking countries in the Middle East, all over the world, with its terror proxies since the mullahs came into power with the Islamic Revolution in 1979. So when you hear someone say, this is the first time Iran's ever attacked another country, that's just more propaganda. It's just more Muslim terror lies. And I'm going to say this from the start. Joe Biden is holding Israel back from attacking and destroying the mullahs in Iran, which is utter madness, not just for Israel, for the world. Joe Biden has been wrong about every single foreign policy issue for 50 years now. If you are a sane American and you vote for four more years of this, forget the southern border, forget all the illegals that he's allowed in, forget the economy, forget the higher crime, forget all of that. The fact that he's allowing Muslim terror to grow and not be destroyed, and we have a perfect opportunity, that is a reason enough to not vote for him. If you are a sane American, as I said, and still vote for four more years of this, we deserve every Iranian-sponsored American death, every Iranian terror plot in the United States, and there have been many. Terrorists do not respond to restraint and diplomacy. There is no diplomacy with these fucking savages. They respond to one thing, being blown up, period, full stop. Liberalism is what is keeping Hamas alive. Liberalism is what is keeping the Iranian mullahs not only alive, but terrorizing the world. Liberalism is what we give to the mullahs and allows them to realize there's nothing to be afraid of. Liberalism is what is going to give Iran nukes soon. Liberalism is the worst thing to happen to this world since communism. Period. Israel is on the front line of the West's fight with radical Islam. Iran is the leader of the radical Islamic terrorism in the world. If radical Islam believes that the West doesn't have the stomach to fight them, they won't stop at Israel. It's not like Iranian terror operatives aren't in the United States. They are, I know, because we talked about this in a prior podcast. They're here, and they're trying to kill Americans. I know this, as I represented a defendant in a federal criminal case in which these allegations, these charges were made. Now, the Iranian attack that occurred over the weekend was pretty pathetic. In result, you know, naturally, Iran only managed to badly injure a 10-year-old Muslim child in Israel who was hit by shrapnel. But it wasn't for lack of effort. Nearly all, if not all, of the missiles and drones were shot down before reaching Israel. And on Iranian state TV, they showed a massive Texas fire. If you can believe this, this actually happened. They showed a massive Texas fire from last month and claimed it was damage from the missiles, their missiles in Israel. Their attack was such an utter flop that they needed to fake damage caused by it. And it should be instructive to the world. This isn't some kind of real world power, Iran. They're savage idiots and killers and liars, and they should be destroyed today instead of feared. Since 1979, when the mullahs took over Iran, they have vowed to destroy Israel, and they've certainly tried through their proxies, Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, now the Houthis in Yemen. And it's not just military or Israeli government that Iran has attacked. They've targeted Jews all over the world, making clear that it's not just Israel they're looking to destroy, but Jews anywhere. Just last Friday, a few days ago, a ruling by Argentina's highest criminal court blamed Iran for a fatal 1994 attack against at a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires. They declared it a crime against humanity. 85 people were killed and hundreds wounded by Iran in that attack, which had nothing to do with Israel. If not for Iran, October 7 wouldn't have happened, or the last war with Lebanon and Israel, or the Houthis taking over ships in the Red Sea. And it's not just Israel that Iran has targeted. Iran's support for Iraqi insurgents led to the deaths of an estimated 1,100 U.S. soldiers, as well as other coalition troops in Iraq, British forces too, up to a quarter of American casualties in the Iraq war can be traced to Iranian weapons or their proxy groups. In Afghanistan, Iran paid the Taliban $1,000 for every American soldier that was killed. And of course, we can't forget the 444 days that the Iranians held the kidnapped 53 American diplomats and citizens at the American embassy in Iran from 1979 to 1981. And Iran's mullahs are a cancer that not only has caused Israel to be attacked from the north by Hezbollah and the south by Hamas since October 7th, also from Yemen by the Iranian terror proxy, the Houthis, as I've said. They're a cancer that attacks Americans, including killing a few American soldiers in Jordan just a few months ago. But wherever they are, they seek to extend their malignant grip on the Middle East. They've attacked the Saudis, as I've said. They've tried to overthrow the King of Jordan, which is interesting because the Palestinians actually killed a prior King of Jordan. Lebanon, and I've got a little more to talk about Lebanon in a bit. Iran took it over by killing the prime minister and occupies Lebanon presently. The place is bankrupt, Lebanon. You can't withdraw money from the bank. You can't use electricity more than a few hours a day. Any educated person has left the country. Gaza, occupied by Iran through Hamas, is destroyed. Yemen, occupied by Iran through the Houthis, destroyed. Iraq, occupied by Iran's militias, destroyed. Syria, propped up and occupied by Iran, it barely exists as a functioning state when it's not being bombed daily by Israel. Now, listen to this one. Before the Islamic Revolution in 1979, the Iranian currency, the rial, the value of it was 78 of them to one United States dollar. Now it's 670,000 rial to one U.S. dollar. The Iranian mullahs, they plunder their citizens' assets in order to give money to Muslim terror proxies to kill Israelis. That's why Iranian citizens drink brown water out of the tap, and they barely made a peep in support of Palestinians in Gaza during the war. They blame the Palestinians for stealing their money and their resources that should be theirs. And this is what the Iranian mullahs do. They looted their country's assets, and instead of helping their own people, they give it to Hamas and Islamic Jihad and Hezbollah. Destroying Israel is more important to the leaders of Iran than taking care of their own people. So what caused this attack by Iran on Israel over the weekend? Iran claims it was due to Israel's attack on its embassy in Syria from a few weeks ago, in which Israel killed senior Iranian military leaders. Well, here's a couple of points. Because everything you hear from radical Islam online, TikTok, on X, Instagram, it's all just massive propaganda. None of it's true. Israel didn't hit the embassy, first of all. It hit a building attached to it, and they killed the senior Iranian terror leader who was one of the main architects of the October 7 massacre of Israelis, as well as an Iranian terrorist leader responsible for getting weapons to Hezbollah in Lebanon from Iran to be used against Israelis. So certainly Israel had a right after the massacre that it suffered on October 7 to kill one of the leaders of it. And that's what they did. They clearly had the right to go after the guy that's getting weapons to Hezbollah that are going to be used against Israel. Period. And just because a building has a consulate sign on it doesn't make it a real consulate when you're dealing with Muslim terror. Iran uses Syria as a way to get weapons to Hezbollah. It's just another base to attack Israel. They occupy Syria. They use Syria as a terror base. They launch rockets from Syria into Israel. So that's the first reason why Israel's strike a few weeks back was completely legitimate. It wasn't like they were attacking innocents in Iran, were they? Second, how can Iran claim that they're responding to an Israeli attack? Iran was responsible for October 7, for that Hamas massacre. Hamas is an Iranian terror proxy. When you hear them say, how dare Israel attack our embassy? Well, Jesus Christ, man. October 7 was you. They know it, but they know that if they keep lying, eventually useful idiots will run with it. Period. When Hamas was attacking Israelis, they used Iranian weapons, and their underground terror tunnels were funded in part by Iran. They trained, the killers trained in Iran. They went to Egypt in tunnels underneath the ground, and they went to Iran to train. This was Iran that did this on October 7. Hamas is part of Iran, period, full stop. So Israel had 1,200 citizens massacred, burned alive, raped, and tortured, hundreds more taken hostage, and Iran should get off scot-free for that? Israel had every right to bomb Iran on October 7th, that day, and they should have. Instead, not surprisingly, Israel's prime minister just went into Gaza and gave Iran mostly a pass. They should have bombed Iran that day. They should have. Hezbollah began launching rockets at Israel on October 7, completely unprovoked, at the direction of Iran. That Iran's territory was immune from being attacked by Israel after what Iran has done through its terror proxies is simply stunning to me. But this is the double standard I keep talking about, the status quo that needs to change. Every time a terror proxy of Iran strikes Israel, Israel should be sending missiles into Iran. They have to treat Iran the way Iran treats the world. But the world refuses to challenge Iran, and they keep getting away with their murderous, destabilizing ways. And they keep doing worse things. They keep seeing what they can get away with. They're measuring the world's response. And the world keeps failing every fucking test. Iran massacres 1,200 Israelis on October 7, kidnaps hundreds. Iran is not attacked. Israel is told not to hit Iran by Joe Biden. Iran sends 300 missiles and drones into Israel, which could have killed thousands. Israel, again, is told by Joe Biden not to respond. It cost over $1 billion to take all those missiles out of the air. That's what they're going to do, Iran. You can see what they're doing. It's death by a thousand cuts. They're going to bleed Israel dry with this terrorism on every border. I mean, if Israel doesn't finally destroy the evil regime in Iran, they're just going to simply bleed to death. You can't live this way with having terrorists on every border attacking you 24 hours a day. You need to cut the fucking head off the snake. Cut it off. Iran bombed last night. I don't give a fuck what Joe Biden said. He's wrong about everything. And it's not just Israel and the United States who Iran has harmed. They've attacked many Muslim nations as well, including Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Yemen, Bahrain. This isn't a religious thing to Iran. They want to take over the Middle East. Now would be the time that Israel should create major deterrence with Iran. Israel, as I said, just can't keep living like this, getting attacked on every border by Iran's proxies. A major attack on Iran should occur, as Israel has superior weaponry and abilities, and we saw that over the weekend. I mean, Iran is pathetic. And of course, the fact that they didn't achieve any of their goals, you know, all the liberals on TV are saying, well, it was just performative art. Really? Really? What if Israel missed one of those missiles or drones? You want to have a town destroyed? Are you kidding me? How would you like to have rockets fired on your heads, liberals, and hope that we could take the missiles out of the sky before it lands on your head? Look, a major attack, military sites, nuclear sites at the very least, Although, let's be clear, there's no point in establishing deterrence because that means that Iran's leadership gets to remain in power. I'm not sure what else the mullahs have to do to finally be taken out, but Jesus Christ, man, Saturday night should have been it, because it's the same mowing the lawn strategy that failed Israel so badly leading up to October 7. They kept letting Hamas hang around, kept slapping them around but not destroying them. Look at what they created by kicking the can down the road. And Hezbollah is 100 times more dangerous than Hamas. And they're firing rockets into Israel every day. And it's just completely status quo. It's okay. Not a big deal. Just deal with it. Well, when does it end? It doesn't end with a diplomatic solution as Joe Biden is pushing on Israel. What is the diplomacy that you're going to do? What? Other than just killing yourselves, what does Iran want? They don't care about being starved. They're starving their own people. They don't give a fuck about that. It can't be diplomacy. You can't always be a pussy in every single situation. Sometimes you got to take the wood out. If Israel gave Hamas their own state, as Biden and the Democrats in Europe are pushing for, does anyone think that Hezbollah and Iran wouldn't believe that this is anything but capitulation and they just push harder for Israel's final destruction? They're not even talking about getting their own state. Only the Europeans and the liberals are. They're openly saying, we want Israel. We want Palestine from the river to the sea. They're telling us, and we're just not trusting their word when they're telling us what they want. If the Iranian mullahs are removed, Iran becomes a peaceful place again, as it was in 1979 before the Islamic Revolution, before they went back to the Stone Age. Hamas and Hezbollah lose their main sponsor, and they eventually disappear. This is so obvious to anyone with a brain in their head, but alas, it's not clear enough to the countries which are attacked the most by Iran for some reason, America and Israel. Israel won't do it alone, of course, they should. Bibi had 4 years with Trump in office to do it, and he didn't do shit. And it's not just Joe Biden's fault. It's Trump, and it's Obama, and it's W, and it's every president going back to 1979. So who's the problem this time? I mean, this is a clear escalation by Iran. Whatever Iran has done to Israel in the past is not compared to what it did on Saturday. And not surprisingly, Joe Biden is again the man who makes the mistake, the one who makes the foreign policy mistake every single time he makes any decision. And he let Iran off the hook on October 7. He let Hamas off the hook by not allowing Israel to go into Rafah and finish them off. And now he's allowing Iran off the hook again and stopping Israel's response to these 300 missiles and drones. So now this has to be the new normal for Israel, according to Joe Biden? You just have to accept 300 ballistic and cruise missiles and drones? That's normal? How would you like it, Joe Biden? I laughed when Biden stated, as Iran's escalation began on Saturday, this is what he said. I just met with my national security team for an update on Iran's attacks against Israel. Our commitment to Israel's security against threats from Iran and its proxies is ironclad. That's what he said. Except it's not. It's not. The October 7 massacre, Iran, the rockets from Hezbollah into Israel, Iran, the 300 missiles and drones from Iran into Israel, Iran, the Houthis attacking ships and the trade routes there. None of this happens if Joe Biden isn't the American president. All the terrorists know how weak Biden is. They knew that Biden wouldn't let Israel respond. They know it. They know how weak he is. When he was asked, as I said, what he wanted to tell Iran, he makes those Clint Eastwood eyes and says, don't. They ignored him and attacked anyway. I can promise you that with Donald Trump in office, Iran and his proxies don't dare to do any of this. From October 7 to Saturday night's missile attack on Israel. Beyond allowing Iran to commit this massacre in Israel with no penalty, beyond telling Bibi that Israel will not have America's backing if they respond to the missile attack, Biden also unfroze $16 billion of Iranian money right around the date of the massacre in October, leading all the way up to the end of March just a few weeks ago. Of course, some of that money was used by Iran for terrorism against Israel. But this is the way Biden is. He appeases radical Islam. He's dangerous. And it's not just okay with him being weak when it comes to Iran, but Biden has come out so hard against Israel and its war with Hamas to the point of threatening Israel with holding back weapons if they dare go into Rafah and finish off the last two battalions of Hamas terrorists left in Gaza. I mean, when you say these things publicly, you're telling Hamas you don't have to agree to any ceasefire deal. Because just keep dying, having civilians die in Gaza, and we, the American president, will take care of Israel. We'll tell them not to hurt you. That's why Hamas keeps on turning down every single ceasefire offer, and some of them Israel's barely involved in. They're made by Qatar, they're made by Egypt, they're made by America. Hamas keeps saying no, they don't want a deal because they know that they can wait this out as long as they keep killing their own citizens. Think how nutty this is. Secretary of State Blinken telling the world, quote, that right now there is no higher priority in Gaza than protecting civilians, surging humanitarian assistance, and ensuring the security of those who provide it. How would you like to be a family member of one of the five Americans still being held hostage in Gaza by Palestinians? How would you like to be a family member of the 33 or whatever it is Americans that were killed in Israel by Palestinians on October 7? How nutty is that, that Blinken is saying, no, we need to take care of the Palestinians first. Nothing is more important. That's what he said. Nothing. There's no higher priority but taking care of these fucking Palestinians who support Hamas, who were involved in the kidnapping and the torture and murder of Israelis. We should give a shit about them ahead of our allies and ahead of our own people? It's utter fucking madness. Hear what I'm going to ask you. Can anyone in my audience name a single one of those five Americans who have been tortured in captivity, beaten, raped for the last 6 months in Gaza? Can any leftist or liberal or Democrat say their names? No, but you can say George Floyd's name, but you can't say the five that are being hidden in the tunnels of Gaza right now, Americans? Of course you can't. You can't say any of their names. We need to apparently concern ourselves more with the perpetrators of the terrorism and not the victims. And what caused this change in foreign policy from the Biden administration? We've talked about this because Biden is afraid he won't get the Muslim terror vote in Michigan, as they loudly claim they won't vote for Genocide Joe. And they're saying you're going to lose this important swing state unless Biden throws Israel under the bus and supports Muslim terror in Gaza. But that also means favoring Muslim terror over American interests. Now, these are the fine Americans who are pressuring Biden in Michigan, just so we know. 10 days ago in Dearborn, Muslim terrorists held a rally, and these fine, noble Americans now, I suppose you can call them, the Muslims activists, who this is who Biden is selling Israel out to. They screamed death to America, death to Israel. They said that Israel doesn't have the right to exist, that, quote, America is one of the rottenest countries that have ever existed on this earth. These are the people that Joe Biden is wooing for votes. Diseased Muslim terror supporters who hate America. The language by these Muslim terror leaders in Dearborn, which is now known as the jihad capital of America, the language was so offensive that even their mayor, Abdullah Hamoud, yes, that's his name, he slammed the inflammatory and violent statements made at the gathering. That's what he said in a post on Twitter. Quote, over the weekend, video emerged of a rally in Dearborn where some attendees were chanting statements that were unacceptable and contrary to the heart of this city. Actually, wrong. That's exactly what Dearborn is. They support Muslim terror against America. They are, again, the jihad capital of America. Are you kidding me? This is what Joe Biden is appeasing? Shame. Shame. Shame on you. Shame on any Democrat. Shame on anybody who votes for this old fucking slop. Biden claims we need a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, and he said it's all about saving lives. It's not about saving lives. In case you're not convinced, every ceasefire now account on Twitter, you know, we got to have a ceasefire, we got to have a ceasefire, begging for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. They cheered Iran's attack on Israel last night, excuse me, on Saturday night. I saw it. I was on. I looked. I mean, they knew that Iran was possibly triggering a massive war in the Middle East, but they're saying they want a ceasefire. They were at a protest in Chicago when the Iranian attack started, and they broke out in cheers and saying, hands off Iran, when news came that Iran was attacking Israel. Hands off Iran? Just like they did on October 7th, hands off Gaza. As I've been saying since day one, the ceasefire now crowd simply wants Hamas and Iran to remain in existence and be able to kill Israelis in the future. How can you claim to want peace when you're cheering Iran launching missiles at Israel's population centers? It's never been about peace for the leftists. The savage Islamists and the right-wing Nazis who support radical Islam against Israel. It's all about destroying Israel. That's it. So these lunatics in Dearborn, I mean, it's just incredible to me. This is what the Democratic Party is today. Israel was prevented from finishing off Hamas, as I've said. The Muslim terrorists who killed all these Americans. Israel was threatened with weapons being withheld by Joe Biden. Kamala Harris openly threatening Israel. You don't think Hamas and Iran sees this? Of course they do. Just because Biden wants the Muslim terror vote? What kind of country are we? We can't put country ahead of raw, naked ambition and greed? Well, I've got a question to the Democrats who love Hamas and Iran so much and that they're abandoning Israel, the Democrats. What about the aid we've given to Lebanon? You know, the place that's run by an Iranian terror proxy, Hezbollah. Since 2006, we've given Lebanon $6 billion in aid. In 2005, Hezbollah, with Iran, took over Lebanon when they murdered Lebanon's recently resigned prime minister. The former prime minister, Rafik Hariri, was killed along with 21 others in an explosion in Beirut. 2,200 pounds of explosives were detonated as his motorcade drove past the hotel. Among the dead were several of his bodyguards and the former minister of the economy. Hariri had been part of the anti-Syrian opposition in Lebanon, really the anti-Iran opposition. Syria, Lebanon's neighbor, had occupied Lebanon at the time with the help of Iran. As I said, Hezbollah's main backer. Hariri's crime, which caused Hezbollah to kill him, he dared to want Iran and Syria out of Lebanon. He wanted their insidious Muslim terrorists out of his country. An investigation was done to determine who killed Hariri and the others. One of the investigators himself was assassinated by Iran. The investigation turned up strong evidence that Hezbollah, of course, had murdered Hariri. But it wasn't until 2020 that a special tribunal in Lebanon found the Hezbollah operative guilty in absentia for murdering Hariri. It took that long because Hezbollah had taken over the country and was doing all that it could to stop the investigation. As for the one Hezbollah operative who was found guilty, Hezbollah's leader refused to allow his arrest. Keep in mind that Hezbollah killed 241 Americans in a Beirut army barracks in 1983. Hezbollah has killed Israelis and continues to try to kill Americans. They helped the dictator of Syria, Assad, kill hundreds of thousands of Syrian citizens during a civil war there, including many Palestinians. The fucking Palestinians didn't say a word. Because Jews didn't kill them. They couldn't be held responsible. So who cares? They're just cannon fodder unless you can blame Jews. And on October 7, when Hamas was massacring Israelis along with 40 Americans or whatever it was, Hezbollah began firing rockets at Israel unprompted, unprovoked. Up to now, they fired thousands of rockets into Israel at civilians and have prevented up to 80,000 Israelis from returning to their homes near the Lebanese border. Israelis have been killed by these rockets. Why hasn't Joe Biden threatened to stop aid to Lebanon like he did with Israel? Instead, we're giving them more money, $67 million of our tax dollars to Lebanon just on April 3. Hezbollah runs Lebanon. Hezbollah fires rockets into Israel just because they know they can. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, instead of telling them to stop it, they don't even talk about it. They just threaten Israel daily, saying if you don't stop trying to kill Hamas, you know, we're not going to help you anymore. But they don't threaten Lebanon? All they have to say is, we're done giving you aid until you stop attacking Israel. But they won't do it. And good luck finding a word of criticism against Lebanon since October 7 from Biden or Kamala. Nope, we just have to keep hearing that double standard going. We've got to keep it going. Israel gets all the criticism and Muslim terrorists are off limits. The leader of Hezbollah, who controls Lebanon, gave a speech recently. He said this about what's going on in America right now. Quote, today, what many people demonstrating in America are doing, of course, we should salute them and be grateful to them. The Arabs, the Muslims, and the non-Muslims from among the other free Americans, Christians, and others in the Democratic Party who wrote to Biden, we are uncommitted to vote for you. These people are very influential at this stage, Nasrallah said. He also said, these Americans are so important because Biden, quote, is not afraid of the world, the international community, God, history, or anything. Biden now is afraid of one thing only, that his policy and actions in Gaza will lead him to lose the presidential election. This is why he keeps debating, denying, and playing games. I mean, this is nuts. In their 1985 manifesto, Hezbollah wrote, our struggle will only end when Israel is obliterated. We recognize no treaty with it, no ceasefire, and no peace agreements. I mean, is this the craziest shit that we're allowing Hezbollah, Lebanon to do this, and we're giving them money at the same time? Hamas leaders visited Iran and celebrated the American backstabbing of Israel at the UN. This was a day after the UN Security Council voted for a ceasefire in Gaza that Israel opposed, solely because it would allow Hamas to survive and attack Israel again. Hamas noted that Joe Biden's administration abstained. They didn't vote with Israel, they just abstained. They didn't use their veto. First time ever that they've done it. And Hamas celebrated this. They celebrated the isolation of Israel at the UN, which was caused solely by Joe Biden refusing to have Israel's back. When the Muslim terrorists are thanking you for your policy, maybe it's time to change your policy. Could that not be more obvious? But this is what Joe Biden and the Democrats support. They support Muslim terrorists in Michigan who call out openly for the destruction of American Israel. They openly support with billions of dollars terrorists in Lebanon, a Muslim terror state which has killed hundreds of Americans and is firing unprovoked rockets at Israel since October 7. I mean, the billions in aid to Lebanon are partly military weapons. Who do you think's using them? You think that what? We just have to pretend that Hezbollah isn't running Lebanon? We just have to pretend that the Lebanese Air Force and their military forces are just saying no to Hezbollah? Hezbollah would tear them to shreds. This is what Joe Biden and the Democrats openly support. It's absolutely freaking nuts. And as we know, and we've discussed this, and even Hamas admits it, their only military tactic is to get civilians killed in Gaza, to create a humanitarian crisis so the world screams out against Israel, causing Israel to withdraw, allowing Hamas to remain in existence. The world knows this and still walks right into the trap. It's almost like the world just wants to pretend that what they're seeing isn't actually happening. Everyone knew this from the start. This is no secret what their strategy was. This is why Hamas not only hides behind civilians to get them killed, but counts the Palestinians that they kill with their own misfired rockets inside Gaza, the ones that they shoot who are trying to get aid. They count them as the deaths from Israel's bombing. Everybody knows this. And still the world walks into this trap. I'm getting to the end of this because I'm like a broken record here. I've been saying this, you know, since 1979 when I was 14 years old. I've been saying this publicly since 2006. Are you kidding me? Not only has Joe Biden prevented the destruction of Hamas, the destruction of the mullahs in Iran now too, but he's responsible for the hostages still being held in Gaza. He's the one who made clear to Hamas that they don't need to fear Israel because he's controlling Israel and won't let Israel go after them. And the more destruction of Gaza that occurs, the angrier Joe Biden will pretend to get against Israel because it's costing him the Muslim terror vote. Who the fuck wants these people's vote? Why should Hamas ever agree to any ceasefire terms? And they're not. They keep rejecting every last one of them. The only downside for Hamas is that if Israel keeps destroying Gaza, but Hamas has made clear they don't care if Gaza's destroyed. They certainly don't care about any civilians there. Bottom line is this, and then I'm done. Israel and the civilized world finally has the obvious window to remove the Iranian mullahs from power. They won't do it. I promise you that Israel will not do it. They're not going to do it without help from America. This is what Bibi is. He's made every mistake in the book since October 7 started, since well before October 7, by letting Hamas and Hezbollah grow. He asked for this and he got it. We will regret it. They will regret it because eventually Iran will get nukes and it is coming soon. And then the entire world will be held hostage by the Islamist fucking maniacs. Killing Iran's Revolutionary Guard leaders as they meet in Syria or wherever is not the answer anymore. Iran needs to be hit on their own soil. Israel has lived with terror attacks and rocket attacks on Israeli soil for decades now because of Iran. It's time Iran sees what it feels like. If you're not willing to destroy the mullahs, at least let them see what war on their homeland is like. And I mean real war, not some bullshit Arab army fighting them. It's time. I have been screaming about this publicly, as I said, since 2006. It is time. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break here, and then I'm going to go into something happier because I'm really like ready to puke. I'm so sick of this. Jeffrey Lichtman for Beyond the Legal Limit. Jeffrey Lichtman for Beyond the Legal Limit. We're going to completely change gears here. Okay, we went from the Iranian attack in Israel, and now we're going to go to one of the greatest rock bands of all time, The Who. Yes, The Who. I've been thinking about The Who for a few weeks now. I've referred to them in previous podcasts as one of the three great bands at the very top of the food chain when I was a kid in New Jersey listening to music in the 70s. They were one of the three, but there's always been something. And look, this is a podcast about honesty. So I'm going to say some things here that are going to be a little bit controversial. I don't want to upset anybody. Okay. But there's a little dirty secret here about The Who. They were always third in the top three in the pantheon of top bands. Now, when I speak of the top three bands, I'm obviously referring to the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, and The Who. There were other bands that were, I wouldn't even say close, maybe Pink Floyd, but not really. I mean, Pink Floyd was great, but no, they were not really that close. There really is no debate on this. You're just going to have to accept this as fact. And every other band was beneath these three. There were plenty of good bands back then. You know, bands like Boston had a couple of good albums, and I don't know. There's plenty of good bands, but there were three exalted members of that top group. These three were spoken about, as I've said, in hushed tones in the hallways of my grammar school and middle school in Clark, New Jersey. Their places in the top were really untouchable and undisputed. And no one, here's the thing, no one really considered The Who as the top band of those three. And I have some very vivid memories of being a kid. For some reason, I can remember like even conversations as a kid. I never bought a Who album. True story. Until I was an adult. And then I bought a few CDs, and now obviously I can download to my heart's desire. But I never bought a Who album. I always resisted, and I think it was out of loyalty to the other two bands. I know this sounds like idiocy, and well, that's because it is idiocy. But the fact is, The Who was third. And it's sad to me, because they're really fantastic. I mean, I set out over the past 2 weeks to discover why. And look, I took out a whiteboard. I took out a number of grease markers, grease pens, and I just kind of set this out like some Venn diagrams, and it took me a while, and I eventually figured it out. But I'm going to start because there's some uninitiated members of the audience who don't really know who the who is. I mean, frankly, shame on you. Shame. Shame that you don't know who the who are. They had like 75 great massive hits. Their output with just great songs equaled anything the Stones or Zeppelin put out in terms of just in terms of sheer great songs. You cannot deny it. Okay, you cannot deny it. The Who was that great. I'm going to give you just a few seconds of just a snippet of a smattering of great Who songs. There's just so many. The first one is Who Are You? Go ahead, Mr. Producer. Heard that song? It's fantastic. The next one, Baba O'Reilly, Mr. Producer. How about Behind Blue Eyes? Come on, this is fantastic.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man. Behind blue eyes, no one knows what it's like to be hated, to be faded, to telling only lies. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be.
Won't Get Fooled Again? Come on. This is gold. It's gold. Go ahead, play that. I Can See for Miles, another great song. Go ahead, Mr. Producer, play that.
I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, 'cause there's magic in my eyes. See for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh, yeah. And there are dozens dozens more. I mean, this is just the tiniest of tips of the iceberg. Now, The Who was led by guitarist Pete Townshend, who wrote practically every song for The Who as well. It was his band. They had a great drummer. And again, I am not a music historian or student. I just know good music. The Who had a great drummer in Keith Moon, but it was Pete Townshend's band. It was clear. That's how we felt as kids when we made a decision to put them third. Pete Townshend was the band. There were other great pieces in it, but it was Pete Townshend doing the great lion's share of it. Now, I'm going to play snippets of my two favorite Who songs. I really wanted to play four, but I'm going to play two. I might play three. The first one is a song from their very first album, and they really were a different band in terms of music. They were a mod band. Now, again, you have to be of a certain age to know what I'm talking about. Mod is a term. It was a London subculture in the mid to late 60s, early to mid, in the 60s, that encompassed not just music, but fashion too, and even motor scooters. And The Who was maybe the main mod band. So here's probably my favorite Who song from that mod era, and it's from their first album. I just love this song. I mean, I first heard the song when I was a kid. I still love it decades later. Mr. Producer, go ahead.
I don't mind other guys dancing with my girl. That's fine. I know them all pretty well. But I know sometimes I must get out.
And that was The Kids Are All Right. Just phenomenal. I mean, just phenomenal. There's other great songs on that album. My Generation, obviously, is off the charts. You should listen to that. Please listen to it. Listen to it. I know what I'm talking about. The Who invented the rock opera with Tommy and Quadrophenia. They were groundbreaking in so many ways. They just were. And I'm going to play my all-time favorite Who song. And it's not, I noticed this, it's not on almost any list of the top 50 Who songs, and I don't really understand why. Now, I understand that, to me at least, a lot of the so-called best Who songs are overplayed. You just hear them too much. It's just too much. It's too much. And when a song gets overplayed so much, to me, the joy is taken out of it a little bit for me. And maybe that's why I settled on this song. But it starts with such a massive power guitar chord. I'm just a sucker. I'm going to be honest with you. Just so you know where I'm coming from, I am a sucker for that massive guitar hook in a song. And this is my all-time favorite Who song, The Punk Meets the Godfather. Mr. Producer, the first minute 40, if you will. Go ahead.
You only earn what we gave you.
just wonderful. I mean, just like, just wonderful. That hook, the chord, Jesus H. Christ. One other song I got to play really quick on the same album. That was from Quadrophenia. The song, The Dirty Jobs. Not a very popular Who song. The first minute and three, if you can, Mr. Producer. It's just so, it's so awesome. It's so awesome. Go ahead. Just love The Who, but they don't get the respect they fully deserve in my estimation, as I've said. And I sought out the answer over the last 2 weeks, and I think I have the answer. I think I found it. It's not because they were ugly. I mean, yes, Townsend had a big giant nose. Roger Daltrey, he's a good looking guy. You know, look, I mean, no gay, but I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, he's a good looking guy. You know, you have to admit it. Guy was in shape. He looks great. He looks great today, even. He's a great lead singer, too. I mean, it's not because of looks that people put The Who third. It's just not true. Roger Daltrey is a good look. He's a good-looking man. Did I ever tell you the story about me standing next to John Kennedy Jr.? We both got sworn. Well, that's for another day. I think I might have told that story before, but another thing about a good look. But whatever. I listened to hundreds of Who songs the last couple of weeks, and then I listened to a ton of Led Zeppelin. Now listen, I have been listening to this music since I'm a kid, but I never studied it. I never studied it the way I did the last 2 weeks, and it hit me. The Who, which has massive power guitar chords, massive guitar hooks, so does Zeppelin. They, you know, different music, obviously, but The Who, equally great songs, just different type of songs. So why is it that Zeppelin largely is considered to be better than The Who? You ask 50 people. In my estimation, I would say probably 39 would say Zeppelin ahead of The Who. 39 out of 50. That's 78% for you math-challenged people in my audience. What do they have that The Who does not have? Both have great lead singers. Both had great drummers in Keith Moon and John Bonham, although John Bonham was much more important to Led Zeppelin than Moon was to The Who, respectfully. And I also, respectfully, believe that John Bonham was a much superior drummer, a very strong drummer. I don't think there's any comparison, but I think most people would tell you that Keith Moon was a top five drummer of all time. I don't think anybody would say that John Bonham wasn't the greatest rock drummer of all time. Just listen to Zeppelin. I mean, it's not even a question. He was that great. But I'm going to play you snippets of two Zeppelin songs. The answer is in two songs. And it happens to be my two favorite Zeppelin songs from the same album, Physical Graffiti. And the songs are in consecutive order in that album. You will find that answer as to why Zeppelin is better than The Who just from these two songs. The first song I'm going to play, and look, I'm not embarrassed to say what I'm going to say. The first song I'm going to play, it brings tears to my eyes every single time I listen to it. I'm not shitting you. The only other song that brings tears to my eyes when I listen to it is Guns of Brixton by The Clash. The difference is that what makes me tear up in this Zeppelin song, the song is The Rover, is the guitar work in it. I'm going to play two parts of it, and I think you're going to start to understand what exists in these Zeppelin songs that is not present in the Who. Okay, so we're going to play from the beginning of the Rover until a minute and eight, until the vocals start. No disrespect to the vocals by Robert Plant, but it's... I don't need to hear the vocals in this song. The vocals are secondary, meaningless in this song. If I had an opportunity to just have this song without the vocals, I could die and go to heaven because it's that good. From zero, from the start until a minute and eight, you're just grabbed by the throat by this song from the start. I don't know if there's another song in the Zeppelin catalog other than Kashmir that does this so effectively from the first note in the song. And go ahead, Mr. Producer, from the beginning to a minute eight. I'm going to play you now the part that makes me misty in the eyes, that makes me tighten the trousers. From a minute 19 to a minute 53, it's hard to describe why and how this is so perfect, but the guitar is the vocals in this song. All right? From a minute 19 to a minute 53, I want you to listen to this and just feel the overwhelming emotion that comes during this piece. Go ahead. And finally, I'm going to give you 20 more seconds from the 2:11 mark to 2:31. Just listen. Go ahead. Now, The Who, with all their great guitar hooks, and they have so many power chords, beautiful stuff, they just don't have this. They just don't. I mean, they just don't. I mean, they were emasculated by this sound in comparison. No disrespect to The Who. I love The Who. Top five band for me of all time. Now, the apex of the Zeppelin guitar genius, and look, I have to say it. I can't deny it. I'm sorry. I can't deny it. No band has ever had this or even come close to what I'm going to play you next. I want you to listen to this, and I want when this you finish this podcast, I beg of you, to listen to this entire song, and the Rover as well. You need to listen to this entire song from soup to nuts, from beginning to end. The song is In My Time of Dying. I'm going to play you the beginning. And you're going to hear the massive drumming of John Bonham playing off the Jimmy Page guitar. And vice versa, frankly, because I don't know who's following who. I don't know this stuff. No band has ever come close to this. And again, no disrespect to Robert Plant, who in my mind is the greatest rock vocalist that's ever existed. I'd love to hear this without the vocals. just the guitar and the drums, no vocals, the whole song. When I listen to this song, my heart races from the guitar. I feel short of breath. 50 years after listening to it the first time. That's how nuts this is. I'm going to play you the first 2 minutes and 15 seconds of In My Time of Dying. And I want you to study this. This is important for all of you out there. This is important to listen to this. And I beg of you, even the people that are aware of this music, the musicians that are listening, you haven't listened to In My Time of Dying probably in a couple of months. I beg of you, listen to it from the beginning. Here's the first 2 minutes and 15 seconds. Now, that's not yet what kills the Who dead. I'm going to have you listen to this piece of the song. From the 3:39 mark to the 5:40 mark, I want you to listen to this and listen to how the guitar goes from standard amazing to otherworldly. I mean, look, I'm not blowing smoke here. This, I've never heard this before or since. This is why we were lucky as kids to grow up with this kind of music and why music sucks today. You can find it from the 3:39 mark to the 5:40 mark and In My Time of Dying. Listen to this guitar, how it's so completely and totally out of control, but totally in control, if that makes any sense to you at all. I don't know how anybody can move his fingers like this. I don't understand how it's even possible. I've never heard of it, and I've listened to all the guitar greats. Jimi Hendrix is, oh, he's the greatest. Bullshit. No disrespect to Jimi Hendrix, bless his soul. No. Nothing can compare. 3:39 to 5:40.
I'm
And then lastly, there's more. And this is the last piece I'm going to play, from the 617 mark to the 723 mark. Listen to this. This is pure madness. And this puts the end of the debate of the Who versus Zeppelin. There's just simply no debate. Go ahead, Mr. Producer, from 617 to 723. Now, after listening to that, the interplay between the greatest drumming in rock history and the greatest guitar work in rock history, you now understand why Zeppelin had to break up after John Bonham died in 1980. And I don't think I ever really thought of this until the last 2 weeks. I never really understood why. Why would you break up? I mean, you got three quarters of the band. He's the drummer. Now, I always knew he was a great drummer. But it isn't until you really listen closely you understand why Zeppelin could not exist without John Bonham, because there is no one on the planet that could really replace him. And this is why The Who felt they could replace Keith Moon when he died in 1978 with Kenny Jones. Although, with regards to The Who's output, in my mind, it was never the same after Keith Moon died. I mean, Who Are You was their last great album, and that was the last album he was on. I don't even know how much he was on that album, because he was really screwed up with drugs and alcohol. What I played you is the difference between Zeppelin and The Who, and why, as a kid, we all felt, growing up in New Jersey, I remember I have friends that were huge rock fans, and we would discuss this on the playground every day. This is the shit that we discussed every day on the playground. It was who liked Ali and who liked Frazier. Well, Zeppelin or The Who? This is the kind of stuff we would like fight about. And we would insult each other. If you had the wrong guy, well, you were just an asshole. You were just a stupid asshole. I'm sorry. This is the stuff we discussed. And frankly, this is a knockout in the first round. I don't even think it's close. And I love The Who. But they don't have that extra level. They just can't. We all felt differently about Zeppelin growing up. The Who was a great band with great songs. Zeppelin scared the shit out of us. It wasn't enough that Jimmy Page's guitar was so insanely proficient and inventive and ferocious. And this was the time before the internet, so it was word of mouth and radio stations. We heard rumors back then in grade school. Again, we didn't have the internet to allow us to figure out what was real and what was not real. Now, before I go into the rumors, I'm going to tell you. In my room growing up, my tiny bedroom growing up, it's not like today where kids have like art on their walls or expensive shit that their parents put on their walls. We had posters, like $2 posters that you'd get from Spencer Gifts and you slap it on your walls. In all my years of childhood, I only had a handful of posters. Occasionally, you'd change them, maybe once every few years, but probably less than 10 posters. I only had one wall that I could even hang a poster, and my ceiling. I had a poster there as well. My ceiling above the bed, and to the right of my single bed, my twin bed, I had posters. To the right, because that was really the position of the greatest, for me, that was the A1 spot. That was like the top real estate in my bedroom. I had a picture of Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here, with the man on fire shaking the hand of the other fellow. I had a Norm Snead poster. He was the quarterback for the New York Giants. And when I went, because he was my favorite quarterback when he was on the Giants, it was for a brief period in the early 70s. When I went to try to get a Norm Snead poster, he had been traded from the Eagles. And I couldn't get Norm Snead in a Giants uniform. So if you can actually believe I had Norm Snead in the Eagles uniform, you know, in an action photo on my wall for some period of time. And then I also had a poster of Spock from Star Trek. I mean, I was into Star Trek. It was a big deal, big fucking deal in the 70s. But above my head, because I couldn't fit this poster on the wall next to me because it was too large. I like my posters to be simple, just like I am today with stuff like that with art. It's funny. I look at my office. My office has pictures. I don't have anything that suggests that I'm a lawyer, but I've got photos, sports action photos from Neil Leifer. That's all I have in my office, a handful of them. There's no other art, really. I like simplistic things on the walls that make a statement. Above my bed was a gigantic poster, because it couldn't fit to the right, of Led Zeppelin. And I would see them, and I'm laying on my back, and they just scared the shit out of me. As I said, I mean, they were scary motherfuckers. I'm not going to lie. We heard in the hallways of our grade school that Bubble Yum was a great new bubble gum from the 70s, which had surpassed Bazooka and Double Bubble as the number one bubble gum. We heard there were spider eggs in Bubble Yum, and everybody got scared in New Jersey in school. Bubble Yum had to take out ads in 30 New York newspapers to dispel the false rumors, which caused sales to plummet. There was no internet. This was a rumor that began in the New York area. And we also heard that Jimmy Page worshipped the devil. How else could he play the guitar like that? I'm telling you, we had these discussions. Maybe I was 10. We had these discussions in school. Did he make a deal with the devil? Well, guess what? He bought the house of a famous occultist. We knew that. My memories of what I'm telling you are very vivid. I can pull this out of my head. I can't remember what I had for breakfast today. But I remember this. This is what we thought. And you didn't say this shit loudly. It was scary. We were kids in New Jersey. And then we heard that if you played some Zeppelin songs backwards, they referred to the devil. A snippet of Stairway to Heaven. If you play it backwards, you hear, I'm telling you, this is true. It's true. I'm not making this up. Here's to my sweet Satan. He will give you 666, Satan. It's here. I'm going to play it for you. 21 seconds. This is Stairway to Heaven. Led Zeppelin's probably their most famous song. Backwards. Here you go. Go ahead, Mr. Producer.
Here's to my sweet Satan. The Lord will get a bad boy. Make me step first, now and Satan. You
You see, I tell you no lies on this podcast. Suffice it to say, when I learned of this a few summers later, I was in college. I played this album backwards, this cut backwards on a turntable so many times. I destroyed the record player needle or two, as well as the vinyl album. I, of course, destroyed that groove. I did. It makes such clear logical sense to me then and now. This was all about Satan. That's what I thought, that they made a deal with the devil. So, of course, I bought the Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey. I mean, this is what you do when you're a kid, when you're 19 years old or whatever it was. I mean, you buy the Satanic Bible when you believe that Led Zeppelin made a deal with the devil. And the book, frankly, I'm speaking tongue in cheek. I mean, I hope you can tell, but I did buy that book and I did read it cover to cover. It really just describes Satanism as do whatever makes you feel good as long as it doesn't hurt others and don't take any shit from people. That's what the Satanic Bible, I could just break it down for you there. Certainly not the worst advice, although the name of the book and the cover was very scary, but that's all it really was. Jeffrey Lichtman for Beyond the Legal Limit. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening today. This was a tough podcast at the beginning. I hope I made up for it at the end. See you next week.